This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. The show is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. And we have a cracker of an interview today. Alan Knott-Craig is founder of Fibertime, and I guess we could say a stalwart of the local telecommunications industry. It's been many years since I last saw you, Alan. How are you?
It's been a long time, Dunk. I'm still alive, thanks.
How's life in Stellenbosch?
That's good. Mm-hmm. My wife and kids are happy.
How long have you been living there now?
We moved in 2009, 2010.
It's okay, almost, that's 15, you know, 16
years. A long time. I'm not quite part of the mafia yet, though.
Still working on that.
Still working on that, yeah.
I was having a look at your LinkedIn to remind me of all the companies you've been involved in over the years, and many of them you've, of course, actually led as well. Mm. And this is just from your LinkedIn. There are probably lots of side projects I'm missing out here, but there was Cellfind, iBurst, World of Avatar, which is a name I haven't heard in a long time. Mixit, Project Ecseware, Herotel, and now Fibertime. And, of course, we were chatting just before the show. Your dad, of course, is the former CEO of the Vodacom Group.
Yeah.
Did he instill this love of telecommunications in you?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
You know, it's not everyone who gets a dad like my dad. And my dinner table conversations were always around telecoms. So I've always loved it. I loved the impact that it has on, you know, making the world a better place.
Because he started it at Telkom.
Started at Telkom, yeah. Actually started at the post office and then Telkom.
Yeah, I don't know how young you were at the time when he was working at Telkom, but were the conversations about mobile already when you were?
Well, not mobile. No,
it was fixed.
Started out with, he did the first kind of dial-ups and things like that, so then it moved to mobile. So, you know, that was my dinner table conversation, and I saw Vodacom being built and always wanted to get in the industry, but I didn't want to work for my dad. He can be a bit of a tyrant. But I managed to somehow get through the back door into the industry, and I've been in it for about 23 years now.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. Now, I noticed in your latest post on LinkedIn a couple of days ago, in fact, I think it was yesterday at the time of this recording, you spoke about Fibertime. You said it hasn't been an easy ride. There were lots of mistakes, lots of near-death experiences.
Yes.
Shack fires, load shedding, competitor dirty tricks. Cash flow stress, missed targets. Mm. That sounds like the basis for a very good podcast right there.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of material for that.
tell me a bit about the journey around Fibertime. And first of all, where did this idea come from in the first place? Yeah. And what have you learned?
Well, so probably started 2010. I was watching my daughter on her iPad, and she was kind of surfing the internet. Mm-hmm. She was 2 years old, and it just occurred to me that she was pulling away from myself, never mind everybody else who doesn't have internet. And then just down the road in a township called Kayamandi outside Stellenbosch, you got, you know, thousands of kids that don't have as good schools, for instance, and aren't surrounded by books. And they don't have unlimited internet. So, you know, you've got this compounding inequality. And it wasn't that it's life being unequal, or just unequal access to opportunity. And I thought, it's not sustainable. It's not fair. It's not sustainable. I want to live in South Africa for the rest of my life. And to do that, we need to make it a little bit less of an unfair playing field. So then I committed to kind of trying to make money whilst connecting people to the internet. And then I had a whole lot of adventures from there, one of which was Mixit, which was like a really hugely like expensive and embarrassing adventure. I mean, I can't forget about it. It defined me in many ways. And then we did Project Ecseware and we did Herotel. And along the way, I kind of learned like 100 ways to lose money in telecoms. You know, I mean, I probably know more ways of losing money than anyone else in South Africa. In some circles, I'm known as a weapon of mass financial destruction. And I just figured out that if you're going to get people on the internet, real internet is fiber. You know, unless you're living in a rural community where a Starlink or something can work. But if you want real internet, super fast, reliable internet that's affordable, it's fiber. And the people that need that internet the most are living in townships in South Africa. So if you're really going to move the needle, you need to figure out a profitable way of putting fiber into townships. We tried to do it at Herotel, but we had a disagreement with our partners and the guys didn't want to try that. So ended up selling out and immediately started a new business called Fibertime. And with the 100% goal of making money whilst selling affordable prepaid fiber in the townships. So we didn't have any fallback position. There was no leafy suburbs or businesses where I think there's a little bit easier to make money using a traditional model. And we had to innovate our way to something that works in a township on a straight kind of pay-as-you-go model. And it's been about 3.5 years. We've spent a lot of money, hundreds of millions of rands. But we managed to figure it out to the point where, you know, a year ago we were pretty static, not really growing. But now we're doing, you know, 20 to 30,000 new customers a month.
You say fiber is the obvious solution for deploying in these underserved areas. Why not wireless? Is it because of the limitations of spectrum? Or is it actually a more expensive technology to deploy at the end of the day? Or is, you know, everyone, the common knowledge, is, the common wisdom is that it's much cheaper to do it wirelessly than to change infrastructure into every house.
Well, that's definitely not true. Otherwise, you'd be paying much more for your internet at home. Mm-hmm. So, look, fiber was designed for densely populated communities. So the most densely populated communities in the world, in the first world, are all fibered. Tokyo, Seoul, Amsterdam. The only reason you're not putting it into densely populated communities here or in Brazil is because we assume people living in our densely populated communities, which are the townships, are poor. So they don't have enough money. You can't make your money back. And companies have tried to put fiber into those communities, haven't made a lot of money. Our view was not that it's because there's no money. It is because the business model wasn't appropriate for it, for that type of community. And the truth is wireless cannot handle the congested volumes. So, you know, for instance, even Starlink. Starlink doesn't really do sales in Lagos anymore because there's so many people living on top of each other. You know,
too even many Harare, people. In fact.
People jumping on top of – everybody jumping on a wireless network affects congestion. Simple as that. And until you put all the base stations all right directly next to each other, you know, which probably means people aren't going to have boy babies. If you don't going to – unless you massively densify your wireless network, which is not actually economically or practically viable – the only way to offer everybody super fast, reliable internet is put internet directly into their home through fiber. Think about fiber, if you think about it like water, fiber is like a piece of irrigation piping that goes directly to the plant with no interference. No one can take that water out of it on its way to the plant. That plant's going to get dedicated water all the time. Whereas wireless is like a sprinkler. And the mealies in the field are only going to get so much water depending on how many mealies are between them and the sprinkler. And wireless is like that. So wireless is kind of a lazy way to get people on the internet. And it is more expensive, which is why it's so much more expensive for mobile data, more expensive to build the networks. So to, you know, for to get affordable, reliable, fast internet into townships, you've got to figure out how to do it on fiber, which is not for sissies. You know, building physical infrastructure in townships is not for sissies.
I'm going to ask, how have you done it? I mean, what's the business case here?
Well, it's we did a few things. The first thing is a traditional fiber company builds infrastructure either on poles or trenches, but passes homes and then waits for people to give them a call. And sometimes it'll give a free install, but most times it charges an upfront fee and then puts them on a debit order and off you go. It doesn't really work like that in a township. You've got to take all the friction. So what we do is we go into a community, for instance, Kayamandi. We'll go into the Kayamandi township and we'll connect every single home to fiber. So we'll put plants on the ground, plant poles in the ground, put fiber along the poles, and then from the top of each pole, we'll drop fiber from the pole into the home, drill a hole in the side of the home, lead fiber into the wall of the shack or the brick home, put a Nokia router on the wall, every single home. So that means that, you know, for 10,000 homes, there's 10,000 routers in every single home. We don't have a homes passed model. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about homes passed because every single home is connected. Now, that costs money. So let's say it costs you about 5,000 rand per home. The 10,000 homes is going to cost 50 million rand. Okay, that's if you don't make any money, that money's gone. There's no guarantees you'll ever make your money back because we've got no debit orders. We haven't pre-signed anybody. Nobody's paid us an upfront fee. The next thing is you've got to make the internet really cheap. So it's no good charging somebody 1,000 rand a month for 100 meg per second link, which is kind of the going rate at the moment for leafy suburbs. No one in Kayamandi can afford 1,000 rand a month. So we made it 150 rand a month. We actually dropped the price 85% because we felt that was the price point at which people were willing to spend, looking at the market, what they're spending on mobile. And and even though it's a big discount, there's just so many more people living in a community like Kayamandi than there are in Bryanston. You can make your money back in volumes. That is the second step. So you're going to make it really cheap. Effectively, we started a price war, 85% off. The third thing we did is we said you don't have to do a debit order. You can pay as you go. So that's really key. You know, being able to pay per day is very important for somebody who's living in a community where they don't have a lot of disposable income. They've got money, so it's not disposable. So if there's a medical emergency in the middle of the month, they can't have committed 150 rand for the month. They've got to have 75 rand left for the emergency. So we sell 5 rand a day. If you want to use internet today, no problem, 5 rand. Go to a spaza shop, buy a voucher, punch it on your fiber time router, If you don't want to use it tomorrow, no problem. You just use it the next day and the next day, and you just use it when you want to use it. You pay as you go. So,
and then R5 gets you a full uncapped full connection for the whole day.
100 megs per second, 24 hours, unlimited, no catches, no terms and conditions. You don't look at our adverts and there's the whole T's and C's and all that stuff. And that's kind of how it works. And that is like a, almost like a faith-based way of building a network without any guaranteed revenue. And then the view is if you sell enough vouchers per day, you can make your money back on the 50 million rand network. And there are other little things that are different from fiber network, traditional fiber operators. Because we're doing a pay-as-you-go model, electricity is our problem. So a traditional fiber company like a Vumatel, for instance, that you pay them, say, 1,000 rand a month, and if there's load shedding, you keep paying them 1,000 rand a month. You don't get a discount on your invoice at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. If you want to use your Wi-Fi during the load shedding, you get a UPS, you put it on your router, and you carry on using it. But now we're operating in a community where we're selling pay-as-you-go, and they don't have to spend money for UPS. So we find with load shedding, it kills our business. Because if there's 20% load shedding for the month, it hits our revenue 20%. So we have to solve for that problem. We have to put UPSs into every home. We have to make sure that the electricity is always working. Otherwise, people don't buy.
And all of this is pay-as-you-go electricity as well. And I'm guessing some people don't have electricity all the time.
Actually, everyone's got electricity.
All the time. Okay.
Not all the time. There's obviously load shedding. But when we put the UPS there, we have about a 6-hour backup.
Okay.
So even stage 6 load shedding, we can carry the electricity the whole way. And then funny enough, we get bigger revenues because there's nothing else to do in the township and there's load shedding other than use fiber time. So those were the keys, and that's kind of what we had to tackle and figure out.
So how are people using it so far in your experience?
What for? Or
what are they using it for, yeah?
TikTok, big thing. YouTube, big thing. Lots of educational stuff. A lot of moms are letting their kids study from home. I'd say that's probably the biggest utility from a parental perspective is
on education.
Yeah. I mean, I would have thought like a bit more jobs and – you know, working from home and things like that. But it kind of seems to us that the big application is moms getting their kids to use it for homework and stuff. There's also some pure entertainment stuff. You know, a township is a pretty dangerous place. You don't want your kids on the streets all the time. Yeah. My wife wants my kids out of the house in the garden. Typical mom in Kayamani doesn't want the kids out of the house on the streets because there's a lot of bad stuff happening on the streets. So So for my wife, the kids being on a device is terrible, but in a typical customer in Kayamandi, it's terrific because the kids are safe and in the home and not on the streets.
How big is your network now?
We've got 159,000 connected homes.
Okay.
About 25 townships, 6 cities, 5 provinces. It's growing very, very fast.
Wow.
It's growing very fast, yeah.
And financial backers, I mean, how's the business
prayer,
funded?
Prayer, mostly. We were very lucky. You know, I had some great partners from Herotel Days, and they kind of put money into this kind of random dream. And then we've RMB, Rand Merchant Bank, as a bank has been an unbelievable supporter. I mean, we obviously approached all the banks, but RMB was the most innovative and kind of came to the party. We've got a wonderful funding structure now called ReFiber, which is effectively a real estate investment trust, where we buy, as we build our networks, we sell them into the vehicle and we rent them back. And that's funded through income funds and things like that. So we've got a nice long pathway. I mean, to give you an idea, this is not light music, you know, as far as capital is concerned. I remember one of my business, I think iBurst or Herotel or something, I went to my old man and I was telling him what I was doing, and he said, "Oh, you should never start a telco unless you got lots of money." I said, "Dad, what do you know?" You know, and then I realized he actually did know a little bit about that subject. And this time around, we were 100% careful to make sure we lined up the business so that it could fund deployment for infinity. So we do, say, 30,000 homes a month now. That's 150 million rand a month.
That's a lot.
It burns through. We'll be at 400,000, 450,000 by April next year. So that's almost 2 billion rand. And by 2028, we'll be at 1.8 million homes, that's 9 billion rand. By 2032, we'll be at 8 million homes, that's 42 billion rand. So there's an enormous amount of money that's required, and you need to have uninterrupted line of sight of that. And I think our funding structure is such that it works, provided we generate the revenue. The big thing is, are you making money on your network?
And how do you decide where to go next? Is there a particular customer that you're targeting? Will you be opportunistic if you see one of the other FNOs in the market has missed out on a particularly lucrative town? Would you go in there and wire it up? Or will you stick closely to your mandate of going into underserviced areas?
We only go into townships. It's the only business we do.
Only townships.
We're not interested in anything else. Okay. I mean, we will maybe one day be interested in Sea Point and Bryanston and all that. But I mean, for now, it's just townships. That's what the gap is. There's 13 million homes.
Yes.
There's 17 million homes in the country, 4 million in leafy suburbs, 4 million have been passed, maybe 3 million have been connected. The 13 million homes and townships are virtually untouched. Massive open playing field, and we're at less than 2% market penetration. So townships. Metro townships is where we concentrate as well. Rural is a bit more difficult. We'd like to get to the kind of second tier, tier two towns, but we need a nice big densely populated community. And then it's just, you know, whoever can bring us a bull, you know, a builder can maybe bring us a deal or a Whaley or something, you know, so we just kind of farm out as much as we can. We don't care about competition. We love that some companies are out there trying to do what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Elith is one of them in East London, a great company, also very much focused on townships. The guys that the companies that are focused on townships seem to be the ones that are doing the best. The ones that are dividing their attention between nice, comfortable, leafy suburbs and townships are getting it less right. But, you know, our mission is not we're not trying to compete. Our mission is to get everyone on the internet. So the more companies that are getting people on the internet, the better for us. Okay. And we actually just believe that's going to make South Africa a better place.
Right, so, right. Well, I was just about to ask, it looks now that the Vodacom Maziv transaction is going to go ahead.
Massive.
Well, what's your take on that transaction? There was so much controversy around it. Were you pro or against it? And what do you think the impact's going to be on the industry if it goes ahead?
No one in their right mind thinks that's good for competition. I mean, it's not good for competition. But I didn't really care. We were asked to participate in the Competition Commission hearings, but we didn't participate. It's other people's business. Good luck to all of them. Mm-hmm. I think it's a masterstroke from Vodacom. I mean, for Shamil and Vodacom, it's like they've cornered the market in a way. So that's no brainer from a Vodacom perspective. I'm pretty sure MTN's not going to go dry by OpenServe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from our perspective, it doesn't change anything, you know. It doesn't change anything on the ground for us. Okay. We're still effectively the only ones deploying capital at scale in the townships. Mm-hmm. And I'd love for Vumatel and all of these guys to kind of unfreeze, because they're kind of frozen. Yeah. It'd be nice if they get going again, just to get more people on the internet.
Yeah. Okay. So pink fans all over the townships as well. Not something you're worried about.
No, not at all. Yeah. Well, they are where we are.
Yeah.
And don't worry about them.
Okay. Okay. How do you see this industry developing over the next few years, by the way? Do you think it's going to be a lot of consolidation? What's your take on where we go?
A real view or the politically correct one?
Whatever you want to say, Alan.
Look, I think that this industry was probably started by Niels Kuman from Vumatel, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. legendary entrepreneur. And I think he built a business model around cash flow. Mm. And then one day, things started changing to flipping. So a lot of fiber companies in the country are not building to pay a dividend. They're building to flip. You know, they see a big pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Mm-hmm. Vodacom or MTN is going to buy them, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So that's not a healthy way to build a business. We're not building it like that. You know, fiber times being built like a dividend business. You know, we want to pay a dividend. We want to pay back all our shareholders. We want to give a nice yield for our infrastructure investors. And so that's a safer way to build. But when we're selling it, 5 rand a day, it's 150 rand a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like an 85% discount to the industry. So, you know, like you got to ask yourself, where's the market going? Are prices going up or down? So any fiber company that's pushing prices up every year for an escalation, that doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Market expectations, consumer expectations goes down. So I think there's some companies with inflated asset values in their own heads and they weren't building for dividends. Mm-hmm. And there might be a little moment of reckoning for the industry around that. But generally speaking, there's just so much space left in the industry. I mean, we're at less than 25% market penetration. The industry's going to keep growing for another 10, 20 years. 70 billion rand of value was created in the last 10 years, thanks to guys like Neil. And I think a lot more value is going to be created going forward.
Good. I wanted to ask about rollouts in the townships. I hear some horror stories about contractors working on site and being attacked by brazen criminals and that sort of thing. How are you finding the criminality in the areas you deploy? And are you coming up against problems?
No, it is hectic. Mm-hmm. And some of our competitors, I don't call them competitors, but some of the other FNOs have had some heavy moments. We haven't had any heavy moments, touch wood, but mm-hmm. we spend a lot of time in the community. You know, we don't step, no buckies arrive in a community until we've spoken to the business forum leaders, mm-hmm. the local authorities, the schools, the church leaders. You know, you've got to spend a lot of time explaining what you're doing, why you're doing it.
Yeah.
We hire local labor for mm-hmm. everything from the actual ward, never mind from the township. So a lot of that kind of mitigates what's actually happening. You know, if you just arrive there with a team of people to start digging holes and planting poles and they're not from that community, things aren't going to go well for you. There's effectively no government. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no government in the townships of South Africa. We need a way leave, so we get it because that's what the law says. But if something goes wrong, you don't phone the police. Mm-hmm. You don't phone the municipality. So the communities are self-governed, and sometimes there's hectic people running those communities. But at the end of the day, we're bringing something that helps everyone, including the gangs mm-hmm. and their kids. It's the internet, you know, and provided you've done it in a respectful manner, engaged, which is a lot easier said than done, mm-hmm. provided you've gone there in a respectful manner and engaged properly and there's no surprises and the network works mm-hmm. and is being used, we're not having any problems.
Mm-hmm. You've spoken quite publicly in the past about your views on the political situation on South Africa and where it's going. What's your current take on the country?
Waffling towards mediocrity. Mm-hmm. And unless the country grows its economy, we're not going to create enough opportunities for our population. So I think, you know, in our small little way, putting fiber into these communities is an amazing way to make a difference. Mm-hmm. It helps makes a difference for education, jobs, entertainment, keeps people off the streets, maybe helps with crime. Maybe even helps with politics. You know, who knows? Maybe people will vote differently if they know exactly what's going on rather than what's on the SABC. But I'd love to see a positive trajectory in South African politics. Last year was a miracle. The GNU was a miracle. We must never forget that. Mm-hmm. And no business is operating as an island. I mean, Fibertime can be shooting the lights out, but if our country goes pear mm-hmm. Or the Rand falls out of bed or something hectic happens, you know, it doesn't matter how well my partners and I are doing. We're all going to be affected. So all of us in South Africa have to kind of be paying attention to what's happening in our government. And it's not wildly inspirational what's happening right now.
I suppose that's the diplomatic way of, of putting it.
But I mean, that said, I do deal a lot with people in various departments in the government. And my experience of them is they're very well-intentioned, mm-hmm. good guys. I mean, I'm going out of my way not to spend any time with the corrupt people.
Sure.
And for instance, the DTIC are trying to do some interesting things. So I think there's some real green shoots that are happening. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Alan or Craig, you're not CEO of Fibertime anymore. You've been?
No, never been.
You've never been CEO? Okay.
I was never CEO of Sierratel either.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. All right. I'm not a good CEO. What is your official title?
Founder.
Just founder.
I'm like a director or something. Okay. Everyone keeps asking me what
and
my title is.
And you've appointed a CEO for Fibertime.
Yeah, we've got a CEO. Back on Magnus Rademacher. I don't know if you remember him.
Magnus Rademacher. I had a brief chat with him a few weeks ago about coming on the show. So hopefully he'll
come on. He's much better than me in every way. He's a wonderful guy and very lucky he joined us a year and a half ago.
Look forward to meeting him. Alan, it's always good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.